You're listening to the Watched It in the 80s podcast.
Hi, everyone. I'm Damien.
Hey, Adrenalheads. I'm Mark.
And I'm Rima.
And welcome to Watch It in the 80s podcast, a podcast where we talk about movies and television from the 80s. But sometimes we have special episodes like today where we talk about more modern movies that have direct ties to the 80s. And today's topic movie is Top Gun Maverick, starring Tom Cruise. And we have with us today a couple special guests, as you've heard already. First, Rima is back. She was co-host with me for Top Gun last episode. Welcome back, Rima.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Of course. And that other voice you heard was Mark from Adrenaline Cinema Podcast. Welcome, Mark.
Thank you. Yeah, and Adrenaline's. We're here. This is going to be a combined podcast.
Yeah, this is a joint venture here.
It's a joint venture, so both, it's a mix of Watched It in the 80s and Adrenaline Cinema all at once. The reason why we wanted to do this way is because Rima and I did this on the second episode of Adrenaline Cinema, like a year and a half ago for the first Top Gun, and then she just did it with Damien on Watched It in the 80s. So it's pretty cool. So I figured, instead of covering it twice, why not do it once and then just publish it on both? So it depends on who's listening to what.
I'm glad it could work out.
Yeah.
It does. It certainly does. At least I make it work for mine. Like I said, I do always, I look back at the 80s, but if I can cover something modern, like I said, that ties to the 80s, I definitely try to do that. I've done that with Ghostbusters Afterlife, and I also did that with Dune. I
always
kind of like to, and it switches things up too. Keeps things fresh as I'm in the past most of the time. So it's nice to freshen things up every now and again.
Didn't you do that with Blade Runner too?
I did not cover the new Blade Runner. Oh, okay. No. I haven't seen the Blade Runner. Might in the future cover it. We'll see.
Cool.
But so all right. Well, we are going to get started, if everybody's ready, with the plot synopsis. It's a short one. I'll just go ahead and read that. After more than 30 years of service as one of the Navy's top aviators, Pete Mitchell is where he belongs, pushing the envelope as a courageous test pilot and dodging the advancement in rank that would ground him. And now we're going to move on to people we may know in the film or cast notes. Rima, would you like to start off?
I would love to. So, first off, starring Tom Cruise, and gosh, I don't know if he needs an introduction or background, but I'm going to give it to y'all anyway. So, Cruise began acting in the early 1980s. He made his breakthrough with leading roles in the comedy film Risky Business from 1983, and of course, action film Top Gun 1986, which is of course why we are here today to talk about that sequel. And of course, he got some critical acclaim from his roles in the dramas The Color of Money, Rain Man, Born on the 4th of July. And that was just the 80s. And in the 90s, he was a leading Hollywood star. And he starred in several commercially successful films, including A Few Good Men, The Firm, Interview with the Vampire, and The Romance Jerry Maguire. Of course, that's just a little snippet of everything that he's done. But those are some of his more notable.
Yeah, definitely. And then, of course, we have the whole Mission Impossible saga as well, which that was one of the times I went to see Top Gun Maverick here. That was one of the trailers.
The new one? Oh, cool.
It looks so good. Right. Yeah, well, oh gosh, all the trailers for those kind of movies look great.
That saga never ends.
No, it doesn't. Well, actually, whatever it's called, Mission Impossible something, and it's actually part one, which implies there's going to be a part two.
That's pretty cool.
Mark, do you want to go ahead and read Jennifer Connelly?
Oh, cool. My childhood crush, and I still love her. Jennifer Connelly, who plays Penny Benjamin, well, she began her career as a child model before making her acting debut in 1984 crime film Once Upon a Time in America. After having worked as a model for several years, she began to concentrate on acting, starring in a variety of films, including the horror film Phenomena in 1985. Interesting, never saw that. the musical fantasy film Labyrinth, yes, in 1986, which I did see. I actually took my cousin Amory to go see that, and still one of my favorites. The romantic comedy Career Opportunities in 1991. I remember that as well. And the period superhero film The Rocketeer, 1991, and which whom I believe she married her, the lead actor in that, and divorced. she received praise for her performance in the science fiction film Dark City, 1998, another good film. And playing a drug addict in Darren Aronofsky's drama film Requiem for a Dream in 2000, which is a very dark film, but very well acted and directed. In 2002, Connelly won the Academy Award for Best Supporting Actress for her portrayal of Alicia Nash in Ron Howard's biopic A Beautiful Mind from 2001. Subsequent films include the superhero film Hulk from 2003, that was by Ang Lee. The horror film Dark Water in 2005, the drama film Blood Diamond in 2006, the science fiction film The Day the Earth Stood Still in 2008, and I believe that was with Keanu Reeves, the romantic comedy She's Just Not That Into You in 2009, and the biopic Creation in 2009. Since 2020, she has starred in the TNT dystopian television series Snowpiercer, which you could actually hear on Panels to Pixels podcast, which is my other podcast that Steve and Daphne cover.
Very cool. Wow, she's done a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
Like a lot of stuff. Holy cow. Mm-hmm. All right. I'll take care of Miles Teller, Lieutenant Bradley Rooster Bradshaw. Some of his films include The Spectacular Now, Whiplash, The Divergent Series, War Dogs, Bleed for This, Thank You for Your Service.
And of course, we have to mention Val Kilmer, who plays Admiral Tom Iceman Kaczynski in the original and here in Maverick. So originally a stage actor, Kilmer found fame after appearances in comedy films starting with Top Secret in 1984, Real Genius in 1985, and of course, the original action film Top Gun in 1986, and the fantasy film Willow. Kilmer has played many real-life figures in movies, including Jim Morrison in The Doors, An Apparition of Elvis Presley in True Romance, Doc Holliday in Tombstone, one of my personal favorites, John H. Patterson in The Ghost in the Darkness, John Holmes in Wonderland, Philip II of Macedon in Alexander, among others. He's also known for his portrayals of Bruce Wayne or Batman in Batman Forever, Simon Templar in The Saint. And he's also done some voice acting on several projects, most notably Moses in the animated film Prince of Egypt, Walker Sloan in the video game Spider-Man Edge of Time. His performances as Chris in He and Gay Perry in Kiss Kiss Bang Bang earned him nominations for Saturn Award for Best Supporting Actor. And Kilmer is also an author of a book titled I'm Your Huckleberry, a memoir published in 2020. And then he had a documentary called Val in 2021 that covered his life as well, which I've heard. I haven't got a chance to see that yet, but I heard it was outstanding.
It was really good. I highly recommend it.
Yeah, I definitely want to see it now after seeing him in Top Gun. Mark, you up?
Yeah, sure. John Hamm as Admiral Bew Simpson, a.k.a. call sign Cyclone. Most may be familiar with him from the award-winning TV series Mad Men, where he also won a primetime Emmy himself for playing Don Draper. His first major role was in 2000 on the TV series Providence. After that, he had starred on another TV series, The Division, from 2002 to 2004. 2006, he was on a few more shows, The Unit and What About Brian. Started on Mad Men in 2007 and was on until 2015, but even during Mad Men, he continued to stay busy appearing on other shows and movies. Some of his credits include 30 Rock, Young Doctor's Notebook, and other stories, Children's Hospital, and Million Dollar Arm. Post-Mad Men, to actual present day, he's continued acting in many films like Baby Driver, one of my favorites, Nostalgia, Beirut, Aardvark, and Bad Times at the El Royale. Most more recent TV series also include Bless the Hearts, MODOK, which is a Marvel property, and An American Hostage. So, yeah, he's been around, too.
He has tons of voice acting credits, too. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, The Simpsons, Bob's Burger. Can't say that. Bunch of stuff, too.
And commercials,
yes. Okay, I wanted to give a shout out to our first female naval aviator, Monica Barbaro, who played Lieutenant Natasha Trace, a call sign Phoenix. Monica began appearing in shorts in 2012. She had several once and done TV appearances until 2016, when she landed a role on the TV series Unreal. In 2017, she was on 13 episodes of Chicago Justice and 4 episodes of Chicago PD. 2018, she was on the shows The Good Cop and Splitting Up Together. And 2019, she was on a few episodes of Stumptown. Let's see, 2021, she was in a film called The Cathedral. And she has a few other projects listed for this year. I'm Charlie Walker and Army of Dead Las Vegas, which is going to be a TV series. Army of the Dead, excuse me. All right, so that wraps up our cast notes.
Awesome.
You want to move on to general thoughts of the movies? Of the movie. Of general thoughts of one movie, Top Gun Maverick. Well, only one movie we're talking about. There's just one movie we're talking about. Who wants to go first? Rima, do you want to go first?
Sure. I would love to. Gosh, overall thoughts. I mean, it was probably one of the best damn times I've had at a movie in a very long time. I've watched some good movies, been to the theater off and on the last couple of years. You know, it's been a little slow coming back. But probably one of the best damn times I've had in quite a long time. And I think Tom Cruise might be a little tired by carrying the whole damn movie industry on his back. That's all I'm going to say. I just thought it was absolutely outstanding. Had the best time. I think I was crying every 5 minutes. It was that good.
Yeah, it was very emotional. How about you, Mark?
I enjoyed the film. I've been looking forward to it for however long it's been delayed. Now, mind you, I got these similar feelings mm-hmm. in this movie as compared to the original. It felt like Top Gun again, but recast, but with younger, hotter looking people in it. But plus Tom Cruise, mm-hmm. you have to put that mantle on. So I felt it was like a rehash of the same story, kind of the same thing. The only difference is Pete's older, and he at this point he's not at odds with his commanding officer. He's at odds with Rooster at times, and it was a tearjerker thing, because Rooster being, you know, Goose's son and having that tension there all the time. Instead of Iceman, it's Rooster, and then he has to go back, and we get that nostalgic feeling with when we see Iceman. They talk about Goose a lot. We get the flashback scenes, which was really nice to see. But, you know, it's tear-jerking even more so.
Yeah, right.
But, yeah, I enjoyed it. A lot of mm-hmm. people were hyping it and saying it was the greatest thing to come out. I thought it was really great. I give this like a B+ as far as a movie is concerned. I'm not saying it hit every mark, but it's something that we've been looking forward to, and I'm glad I got to see it in the theater and then having to watch it again just for this. And, you know, honestly, I it's probably going to be one of the highest grossing movies for the summer.
Oh, definitely. And I'm with both of you here. I loved it. I thought it was perfect. All the emotions, like Rima said, I think it was more emotional than the first Top Gun for sure. Because it rung, you know, mm-hmm. tried to go ring the bells of the emotions from the first movie and added new emotions. I'm not going to lie. I teared up a couple times. But I went in there, you know, I went in there with questions,
it's okay,
you know,
space.
And I came out with basically them answered. I think it hit all the notes. You know, it was everything I wanted and more, I think, in a sequel/reboot. I loved all the ties to 86. I don't think it was too much. I think they did it perfectly. Like Mark said, almost called you Matthew. Like Mark said, it was just, you know, it was almost like 86 over again, just, you know, done the modern style. But yeah, if I had one little complaint, I would just have to say it was the Hangman character. I felt it was kind of like an unnecessary antagonist. It mirrored the whole Iceman Maverick battle. rivalry, and, you know, with him and Hangman and Goose. And I just thought, well, you had Goose kind of going up against Maverick in this. Not Goose, I'm sorry. Rooster. There we go. Rooster going up against Maverick. So I just didn't really think you needed it. I thought maybe there's a little bit of overacting. Can somebody really be that cocky? I don't know. I mean, I guess everybody was cocky in the first one. And I think so everybody was cocky in the first one. But, you know, this one, he seemed, I don't know, he just had a little too cocky, you know. But if I had to have a complaint, but basically I'm just, you know, I don't really have a complaint at all. But that would be the one little thing I would change, I would say.
Sure.
Maybe tone him down a little bit. You know, I liked the character, and he came in, he proved very useful in the very end of the movie.
I find that interesting, because I feel like I totally get what you're saying, but for me, I think that Hangman kind of represented Maverick in the original Top Gun.
Okay.
You know, Maverick was just as cocky and arrogant. I feel like looking at Hangman, that is
okay,
Maverick.
Okay, so you thought of it that way.
You know,
okay.
That cocky attitude.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what I kind of got from it, was that we're kind of seeing it from the other side instead of, you know, Top Gun in 86, and we're looking at Maverick, and of course, he's our guy, right? And yes, he's cocky, he's a little arrogant, but like, oh, we like him anyway, and he can kind of get away with it. But he has a few super arrogant moments where he comes off a little bit like a jerk in some scenes, and some of the things that he says about how cocky and arrogant, you know, it kind of really shows that side of him. And for me, Hangman is very much in this reboot, or this new version. It's not really a new version, it's just a reboot, it's a sequel. He's Maverick to me. He's got that same cocky arrogance, but, you know, he comes through in the end. He is a good guy. You know, he's got a little bit of a bad reputation, kind of like Maverick did in 86. So I don't know. That's what he was for me in this movie. I thought it was good.
Well, that's an interesting way of thinking about it. Yeah,
I just
took him as Rooster's Iceman. That's so funny. How about you, Mark? Did you have an opinion?
Not really. Like I said, overall, I enjoyed the movie. I didn't have any complaints at all for it.
I just meant about like the whole Hangman character, which we can get into
the Hangman character. I agree with what Rima was talking about in reference to the original. It kind of mirrored and mimicked a lot of what we got from the first movie, which is fine with me. A lot of people complain about it. It's like, oh, it's the same movie again. Those people who love Evil Dead movies complain that they get the same Evil Dead movie in the second one. But, you know, to me, I have no complaints about that either. So I think this is pretty cool.
All right. Well, that being said, you want to move on to our favorite scenes?
Sure.
All right. I don't know. We've been trending with Rima going first, since she's the guest for both podcasts. So why don't you go ahead, Rima, and start us off?
Cool. Thank you. I would love to. I have a lot of notes and things to talk about, so I'm anxious to get started. First, I want to just mention, because my favorite scene is going to involve Val Kilmer. And I want to say that I am super impressed with how they included him in the film. You know, I thought it was very respectful, you know, to, you know, how they incorporated his character and his current condition, you know, in the film. You know, if anyone's not familiar, Val Kilmer has had throat cancer, and he's lost his voice, and he's lost the ability to speak. So for anyone wondering, and I'm sure if there is anyone wondering, you know, why they had to kind of do what they did in the movie with his voice, or, you know, typing out his, you know, his words, you know, that was why. And so I loved that they were able to incorporate it, and that, you know, he seemed to be in really good spirits, and he is still such a star, you know. So the scene with him and Tom Cruise, or Maverick, in the movie, I thought it was very moving. I thought it was very touching. I love to see, like, how Maverick and Iceman, you know, they had such a rivalry, and they picked at each other so much in the original. And before we even saw Iceman, he got the text from him, right? And just that emotion that came from that, it's like, they've been in contact for years, right? I mean, that's what I got from it, is like, they haven't lost contact. They've remained friends all through the years. Sounds like Ice has pulled him out of many, you know, things where Maverick got himself into a little bit of trouble. He's kind of come in and
he's always been there to help him out, right?
and put in a good word for him. So I loved the scene between him and Ice there at his home. You know, I thought it was beautiful. It was moving. You can see how Ice has matured over the years, how he's really protective of Maverick. But he still had that little spark at the end when he asked him who the better pilot was. you know, just
absolutely.
Let's not ruin the moment.
Yeah, let's not ruin the moment. So beautiful. I'm not kidding when I can exaggerate a lot, but I'm not kidding when it was like literally every 5 minutes I'm crying during this film. Just solid tears the entire time. And this one was definitely a big one for me, this scene between two of them. It was so good. And I'm so glad that Tom Cruise fought so hard to get Val Kilmer in this movie, because from what I read, you know, he fought really hard to get him back in and make this worth Val Kilmer coming back for, you know, and, you know, being true to the character and to the story. So absolutely beautiful was the scene there with Maverick and Ice.
Right. It was such a small scene, but such a powerful one. He wasn't in much of the movie at all. But, you know, his presence was there, like you said, with the texts or, you know, the mentions when Maverick's getting chewed out by a superior. And it's just the reference how he has, I think one time there was a guardian angel, which I don't know if that was actually referencing. I took it as referencing Iceman as his guardian angel. But, you know, and just how, like you said, he's gotten in trouble many times and Iceman's been the one bailing him out. And I didn't care for once how Iceman died. That's when the John Hamm character grounded him. Not benched, but he grounded him at that point under the false pretense of bereavement. But, you know, he wanted to get him out of there anyway. Yep. But Mark, did you have any thoughts on that?
I really enjoyed it. It was a much needed scene, honestly. It was very impactful. The fact that, you know, Tom Cruise went to bat for Val Kilmer to get him in and made it clear how crucial he was. This is the reason why they got Val Kilmer in there. Now, I made my stupid jokes about him and not talking and stuff like that. They are stupid jokes. But the fact is, the man is stepping up. And he was in another movie prior to this, just around the time the pandemic started. It was Jay and Silent Bob's reboot. And he made an appearance in that, and we covered that in Panels to Pixels. So he's out there trying to push, trying to get out there and still do his thing. And he's able to do it, and I love it.
I love that for him.
Definitely an impactful scene, and it was needed so that Pete needed that kick in the ass that he needed to do what he needed to do. You know, the fact that Ice would say, "What am I here for? Work." And he goes through that whole conversation. And, you know, at one point he goes, "It's time to go." Iceman tells him it's time to go. And on his screen, and it was literally,
it's time to let go.
So, and that's the actual quote. But yeah, it's literally because he understands how Pete felt when Goose died, and he feels responsible, and that's why he was holding Rooster back. And literally, it's okay. Kind of a short way of saying this is why there's tension here between these two. So I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, and gosh, I think Tom Cruise definitely, as most scenes he does, he nailed that one as he's sitting there and speaking. And of course, Iceman's not speaking. And right there, that message is on the screen. It's time to let go. Yeah. And, you know, Cruise is talking things through. And at the very end, he like looks at the screen again and we see the screen again. And then it's like, okay, so he found the answer to, you know, the solution that he was just, you know, he found the solution to what he was just going through in his head. He's like, yes, you're right. I have to let it go. So. Yeah, it's a great scene. Great scene, Rima. Good pick for your first one. Mark, do you want to go on to one of your favorite notable scenes?
That would be the volleyball game. It's a nice callback to the original, which is so funny. Mm-hmm. Like I said, it feels like it's the same movie again, but with prettier looking people. Man, those guys were all buff. And that chick.
They were cut.
Yeah. And it was great to have a chick in the volleyball scene. So everybody enjoys at this point, but I thought it was pretty cool. And she stood her own. But the funny thing, I thought the when Pete put on his t-shirt while sitting down, I thought that was a nod to Goose, because Goose wore his shirt in the original one. And it was, everybody was always questioning, why does Goose have his shirt on? And it seems to be a topic with a lot of my friends outside, or even friends at work. They're like, why did Anthony Edwards wear a t-shirt? I don't know. Maybe he has sensitive nipples. I don't know.
I don't know.
Or maybe he just burns easily. Who cares?
Yeah.
He's got that dad bod. You know, he's got that dad bod because, you know, he had the little boy. He was the only one with the kids. So.
It was after Revenge of the Nerds. Maybe he got pasty.
Yeah. It's
funny. It was funny, though, because I know anytime I talk about the volleyball scene, I'm always like, Tom Cruise is wearing jeans at the beach. It is hot and sweaty. Yes.
We talked about that.
And he did it again. He was wearing jeans, but they were like a cutoff jean or something, or rolled. I don't remember.
Or shorts.
And there was one of the guys wearing like denim shorts, like cutoff jeans at the right above the knee. Maybe Rooster was, but somebody was. And I'm like, oh my gosh, there they go with the flipping jeans at the beach again. I mean, it's terrible getting
those wet. Shorts are coming back.
Yes,
but shorts are coming back. Jean shorts.
That's fine. It is so fine. But I'm just thinking, you know, I don't know. And it could be just like an impromptu, oh, we're just going to get together. Or maybe if he's not telling people what, because it sounded like he was throwing it together to kind of force them into that teamwork mindset, because you kind of see they weren't working well together as a team. So this was his idea to, you know, make them do that. So if he wasn't telling them what they were going to do beforehand, you don't have time to change or something. I'm not sure, but I'm just thinking, man, rolling around in the ocean or getting all wet, rolling around in the sand, you got to go try to peel those jeans off after. That is a nightmare. It's hilarious. I feel like it was like a little bit of a nod to the original, and the absurdity of being in jeans.
He had his car keys and his cell phone in there.
Talk about a nightmare. Yeah, on top of that. Yeah.
Well, at least this one had a direct purpose, because when Tom Cruise was confronted by a Cyclone, you know, he said, you told me to build a team. There's your team. And they're all carrying Bob off the field and cheering and everything together. Yeah. So it helped. It was a unity building exercise.
Yeah, it worked.
In the first movie, we still don't know why it was there.
There was no true purpose, I don't think, except before. Well, Damien, I don't know. I think you had a good point, because I think you talked about how it was just like a kind of representative of their competitiveness, right? I mean, they're all.
I was reaching for that. I was reaching, but I was trying to give him some credit. I was trying to give Tony Scott some credit.
I think that's totally fine. And I think there's probably maybe a little bit of truth to that. They are extremely competitive. So, you know, yeah. It's there at the field, and it's there when they're playing just a fun game of sand volleyball. It's like they're just super competitive and looking to, like, you know, one up each other. So we'll go with that. Your sound is a lot better than what I was talking about.
Nah, that was a fun one. Yeah, I loved it. And I kind of got spoiled a little bit, because that was one of the clips, actually, when you hop on IMDb, you know, and you just search for Top Gun. That's the first thing they want to throw up at you. And it was that particular beach scene. So I was like, oh, they're going to have another one. How about that? But at least there was a woman.
Yeah. Like Mars. That was great. Yeah. Inclusive.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, the first one I'm going to talk about is actually in the very beginning of the movie, when we see what Maverick is doing now. And he's a test pilot for the Air Force. And the particular, it's referred to as a Dark Star jet. It's some sort of stealth bomber type of vehicle. I don't know. I'm not educated on that. But it's referred to as the Dark Star jet, at least from what I found. And, you know, the program was going to get shut down and people were going to, you know, lose their jobs. And he stepped up and said, well, all right, let's do this today. You know, Admiral Kane, who we didn't mention, Ed Harris is in this. Gotta love Ed Harris. I was thinking to myself, gosh, why wasn't Ed Harris in the first one? Because he just looks like typecasting. He just looks like he's somebody who should have been in the first one.
Yes, he should.
And they brought him back. Yeah. That's all right. Yeah, but. No. So, you know, he took one for the team and put his butt on the line, you know, once again, which we kind of get the gist of it, that this is what he's been doing the last 30 some years when it didn't work out at Top Gun. We find that out a little later. He was only instructor for 2 months. I know, Rima, when you and I were talking last week, I said, oh, OK, well, he was supposed to go back to Top Gun as an instructor. I wonder how that worked out. Well, we found out it didn't really work out for him. Yeah, he kind of sucked at it and he was done after 2 months. Yeah. So, you know, he's still a captain. But highly decorated captain. Saw all the patches in his locker.
The
quite
medals,
impressive.
Patches.
Flown many a mission. So he's been successful. He hasn't been a total screw up at all. So I really like that start of the movie there. And just, gosh, when he was flying the jet itself, like, holy cow. I thought it looked like he was flying into space. I guess he was like on the verge of outer space in the upper atmosphere. I don't know where exactly he was.
Yeah, I think that's what they were trying to present at that point.
Yeah, like, it was like, okay, he's an astronaut, you know, because his suit is totally different that he's wearing. And look at the training he has to go through. Yeah. And but that whole seat, just sitting on the edge of your seat right there in the beginning of the movie when he's pushing it to, you know, past Mach 9. And it goes, you know, he's counting there and the ship's falling apart. He's counting 9.9, 10. And then that instant where after his friend told him, you know, stop at 10. The goal is 10. Don't go past 10, you know. And he says, just a little more. And he goes to 10.1, 10.2. And, of course, the ship blows up. So another example that Maverick still has that little bit of Maverick in him.
Absolutely.
Where he pushes the envelope too much, even though what he was doing certainly saved the people's jobs for a few months anyway. Yeah, it was just I just thought that was a great setup for who he's been, who he's going to be for this movie, and, you know, just what kind of person he's been over the last 30 plus years. So that was my first scene there. And the effects itself were just amazing. I just it was just such a great yeah. scene. And when he blew up, I thought, wait a minute, is this some sort of flash forward? is he dead and the rest of the movie's going to be what led to this? But as we know, he has nine
lives.
That was
a bit of foreshadowing.
We've seen several other times in this movie where you think he's dead and he's not. So.
Yeah. Did anyone else feel like during the scene, and maybe a few others, when they're going so fast like that, like you feel like you're being kind of pushed by those G-forces yourself sitting in the movie theater? Like, I could just feel my body being pressed into the back of the theater chair. Like I felt like I was right there with them. I mean, obviously a lot different, but I could just be like, oh my gosh, they made it feel so real, you know, portraying that it felt like I was almost there with them. So good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the best way I was told to go see this particular movie, now, mind you, I don't have any of them by me, is Dolby D. DX experience.
I heard that too.
So you got the chairs that move, get the rumblings. They actually put hot air from when the jets go off behind you.
Oh, shut
and
up.
Wind in your face.
Wow.
As they, every time you see them push, especially during the training sequences with the rookies, that when Pete's out there with them, showing them dogfighting and all that good stuff. And that, I was told that was the best way to experience it. And unfortunately, I wasn't able to do it. I'm sure they would probably keep this movie in there for a while for those people that want to go see it.
Yeah, I bet it's going to be out for, you know, just a little while. They're going to give it a good run. I'm excited to go to definitely go and see it again. I didn't get a chance to go. For the movie time that I needed to go, that I was actually available to go. It was more of just the regular movie theater. It had the nice seat, but it wasn't in like, you know, all that amazing stuff. I'm like, I don't care. Let me just go because I want to make sure I got to watch it and stuff. But I was like, oh yeah, if you have like the Dolby, then that's going to make all the freaking difference. It was still amazing. It didn't take away from the experience. I just kind of took what time I could.
It enhances it, literally.
Absolutely.
You know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
My friend lost their drink.
Oh, gosh.
Emotions and
that's
everything.
Awesome.
Okay, let's see where we are. I think we all just flew through our first. So we're back to Rena. Yeah. You got another one you want to talk about?
Yes, I have so many I want to talk about, but you guys cut me off whenever. But another top moment for me was Maverick's solo trial run. That was so freaking good. Didn't you guys love that when he proved to them?
Oh, after he was grounded.
Yeah,
he was grounded.
Yeah.
He didn't know
and
what to do.
Like,
It can't be done.
Okay, everybody's losing confidence. So what's he do? He jumps in a plane and they're like, who the hell is out there in that plane? And it was Maverick. And I know I gave a cheer. I was like, yes, he's going to do it and show him it can be freaking done.
Yeah.
I'm like, we all don't need this whole team. Just tell Maverick to go do it. He's got this shit. But I love that they were able, because what they did so well in this movie was they like really drilled this whole flight path into you, right? Throughout the movie. Mm-hmm. So getting to see it at first through Tom Cruise, that you just knew he was going to make it. You knew he was going to, and like he even beat the time because what was it, two minutes 30 seconds? And he did it in like 2 minutes and 15, something like that.
Yes.
And so it was so good to see that he is still the best pilot, that they didn't try to come in and, you know, like, oh, yes, Maverick's good, but he's kind of past his time, right? So they got this new pilot, like Hangman or someone that can come in and like beat him. Maverick was still the best. He went in there and showed him, mm-hmm. you know, that it could be done, that it was possible, and he could beat the time that they set for them. Like, he just went in there and nailed it. And for me, that was like just the epitome of who Maverick is. And so I love that they still kept him on top. He was still the number one pilot by the time that the movie was over, and by doing it with this trial run, I just thought it was great. I mean, I was thrilled. And I think, like, the theater that I was in, everybody was like cheering when they realized that he was going out for it. And the two, when he beat the time, it was great.
Mm-hmm. It's cool.
Yeah. And it needed to be done, because right that instant before he had been grounded, John Hamm's character, Cyclone, mm-hmm. takes over the training. And the first thing he does is, like, he changes the time parameters to 4 mm-hmm. minutes. He raises the hard yep. deck just so they can get through to the mission. And he also changed something else with the exit after they dropped the bombs. I can't remember. And this whole time, it's been drilled in your head ever since Maverick found out about this. It was, somebody's not coming back from this one. And so Tom Cruise, Maverick, the whole time when Maverick is training this, he's trying to, in fact, he even says at one point, he says, you know, and to come home.
Yeah.
You know, that's the key part of this mission, is to get these kids to come home. So this is what you have to do to come home. And as soon as the Cyclone, the Admiral, takes over, he changes those parameters. Like, we just have to get this done. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, he doesn't want to lose men, obviously. I'm not implying that, but it's just, everybody else knows. It's like, oh my gosh, Maverick's been telling us all the, you know, enemy ships are going to be on it. Enemy planes are going to be on us by this mm-hmm. time, you know. And it's like, oh, you have a better chance surviving a dogfight than you do crashing into a mountain. Well, that's true. So, yeah. And then Maverick shows up right at the time. I love that too, Rima. That was a good timely scene there. I loved it. Maverick stepping up and doing what he needed to do. How about you, Mark? You got another one? You got anything you want to add to that?
To me, it was like, I thought, to me, Pete was just giving the middle finger to Cyclone at that point. and to the scenes itself inside the cockpit, the way he was pushing. And we all know that Tom Cruise actually was flying some of these planes at one point and got mm-hmm. certified. So I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, those scenes were live, because some of the information out there is saying that they didn't rely too much on CG.
Yeah, there's a lot of practical effects.
Yeah, which is exactly what it stands for, and that's what makes this a great movie.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
For my particular scenes, it's a couple of scenes, but they all include Penny. And it not to be mushy or gushy mm-hmm. about it, but to see him in a relationship now again.
Yeah.
But the fact that she has a kid herself, and he was climbing out of the window at one point, daughter sees mm-hmm. him, and it's like, oh, who's this old guy climbing out of mom's window?
No,
I thought that
might have been
interaction.
His best stunt in the movie was his jump from Penny's window. That was the best.
And the other scene that with her and him together was actually on the sailboat, and of her making fun of him mm-hmm. because, aren't you a Navy guy? Aren't you supposed to know how to do this?
It was hilarious seeing him clutching onto the boat, like, for dear life. And I'm like, dude, you are a test pilot. Like, you mm-hmm. literally are in danger every time you get into the cockpit. You fly these dangerous planes, dangerous missions. Anything could go wrong at any time. But he looks like he's about ready to lose his lunch as he's on this boat. It was so funny.
I just thought they were cute moments. And it was great to see that. Yeah, we don't get McGillis. There's no mention of her, her character, Charlie. But a lot of the other characters that were in the original were not even mentioned, too. Like Michael Ironside's character wasn't in there. Tom mm-hmm. Skerritt's, or I forget his name, but Mr. Strickland from Back to the Future. None of them were mentioned because I guess it's older people. It's a new time. But the things that mattered were pretty much Goose coming back. Also, in his memories and his interaction with Rooster, as well mm-hmm. as with Meg Ryan's character, which they mentioned because it's Rooster's mom.
Yeah.
So, right. I thought it was nice to have a nod to those. But, yeah, it's the gushy moments between those two I really liked.
Yeah. Oh, man. When, there were the two instances when Penny came home, when they came home to Penny's house, he dropped Penny's Penny off with the motor on the motorcycle. And the first time, I think she says something like, "Don't give me that look," or something like that. And he's like, "What look?" You know. And then she goes inside and closes the door. But then we see from the inside of the house, she's like leaning up against the door, like he's really getting to her. You know, she's putting on this tough front, like, "We're not going to do this again, Maverick." And but that moment, you know, you can tell, like, holy cow, she's certain. She's kind of getting swept off her feet there. I think that was after the boat. They spent the day on the boat, I think. And then the second time, their other date, when they came back to her house, she left the door open. So I thought that was kind of cute, too. You're right. There's just, really cute moments between the two of them. And of course, I don't know.
It was cute, but it was mature.
It was mature, yeah. And I don't know if I'm sure you guys know, but in case any listeners don't know, the character Penny Benjamin was mentioned in the first movie.
Yes, she was.
She was the admiral's daughter that Pete took for a test drive when he was early on getting chewed out by Strickland, Principal Strickland. Not Principal Strickland. You know,
on the aircraft carrier.
Before they got assigned.
He's talking about the flybys. Talking about the flybys and one admiral's daughter or something like that. And then Goose said, "Penny Benjamin?" And so there she is. So she did have a history.
Yeah,
definitely
with Meg Ryan mentioned her too.
Going all the way back then.
Yeah, Meg Ryan mentioned her too.
That's right.
When she came to visit. She was mentioned twice. It was good tie-in for sure.
It felt
organic and it was nice.
It did.
There was clearly, and I like how they didn't try to give us the whole entire history of what had happened between Maverick and Penny, that it was just kind of established that this seems like a back and forth for them. Like, they run into each other throughout the years. There's clearly a spark and they have a fling and sure circumstances, you know, pull them apart. She goes her way or he goes his way. I'm sure being in the Navy, he gets assigned, you know, all over the place or whatever. So it was, it was good to kind of like, they kind of provide you a little bit of that history without kind of spoon feeding it to you. But it was really nice to see a mature relationship between like two people, like in their 50s, you know, it felt real, you know, it wasn't just, you know, a bunch of like 20-year-olds tearing each other's clothes off. It was a nice, mature,
right. Like, relationship. And I thought it was, I hope I'm not taking anybody's scene or note for later, but talk about their relationship when Pete does get the mission, get assigned to lead the team. Mm-hmm. I love when he shows up at the bar in his full dress uniform. And he's just looking at, you know, she sees him. She's busy. She's working. Bar's crowded and she sees him. And it's just like, it was just such a classy, well-written scene to have Pete go and do that and then talk to her. And then you just see them like out on the beach together. And you know what it is. He's saying, after he told her that, "I'm never leaving you again," he's saying, "Look, I'm doing this dangerous mission." And she knows, she's heard all about it.
Yeah.
That there's a good chance he's not coming back. So, or slight chance. I don't know. He's still Maverick. Never count him out.
Yeah, no kidding. And she's heard that
how worried about these kids? He's worried about the kids not coming back.
Yeah.
But yeah, I thought that was like, I saw that. In fact, when last night, when I saw that scene again, my second watch, I was like, man, this is like a really good moment that they put in there. And like the music in the background and stuff. The music was great in this, by the way. We haven't said that yet.
Oh, yeah.
Hans Zimmer did a fantastic job. Actually, that scene, I don't know who did what that, but I know Lady Gaga wrote like the love song for this, which I'm not familiar with. I don't know what it's called, but I know that like the instrumental of that was like playing in the background a lot. I think it was when they were on the boat, Mark. And it might have been in that bar scene,
I think,
too.
You're right. It was on the boat, and then they kind of bring a drawback.
Yeah. They sprinkled it in here and there.
Well, the best part, too, is, like, speaking of the music, think about it. The very beginning opens up with Danger Zone. And we got typical score. You know?
It was perfect.
It was Top Gun. It was, I mean, it's like, how would a Top Gun reboot start? Like Top Gun?
I mean, it was perfect because the shots were, I mean, that's probably like, I mean, there's so many Easter eggs, you know, that we could talk for hours about the Easter eggs and callbacks from the original. But, you know, the opening shot was the same. The card that we got where it talks about, you know, the Navy and Top Gun and the school, and then the shot of the planes on the aircraft carrier, all the way to Maverick racing the jet plane, just like he did in the original, you know, with the music. So it was perfect. I mean, it could totally be cheesy if not done right. But I mean, I know I sound like a big old fangirl when I'm talking about this movie, but it was just absolutely perfect, you know?
No, I'm with you. Yeah, that's what I said. Yeah. One of my overall thoughts. I would say this is perfect.
Yep.
You know, all the tie-ins, like every scene, there was some tie-in, but yet it still wasn't overdone.
No,
in my
it
opinion.
Wasn't overdone. I think it was done.
It was
very,
well done.
Very well done.
Okay, so where are we? That was Mark's point, the relationship. Okay, mm-hmm. Me. Okay, mine's just like a small snippet moment here that I want to talk about, but the Pete's little PTSD moment outside the Hard Deck bar after he gets tossed out of the bar when he can't pay the bill, which is kind of funny. But you know, we had just met all the other pilots, the young pilots that were coming in that were called back, the graduates. And of course we saw Goose, which was fantastic. I mean, Miles Teller, oh my gosh. He looked just like Goose. he did. With just the mustache. They had him with the different kind of Hawaiian shirt. But of course, you know, he's just the spitting image, I think.
It was a perfect mishmash of like if Meg Ryan and Anthony Edwards had had a child, it would have been Miles Teller. It was just absolutely perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah. They did a good job.
But when Pete was outside getting ready to leave and the great balls of fire started and everybody was singing and then, you know, he just kind of stood at the window and then that's when he started having the flashbacks and we had to relive through Goose dying. Thank you very much.
Yeah, that is the tears.
You know, but, and it was just, you could just tell it was all rushing back to him and seeing Goose there. Seeing Rooster
being
there.
Being like his father.
He was already scared that he was coming to begin with because he knew this mission was going to be too risky to send him on. But then when he actually saw him there and being the spitting image of his father, it just all came rushing back to Pete. And then, of course, Penny, you know, caught a glimpse of Pete there and kind of knew what was going on in his head a little bit, which maybe, you know, she had some sympathy at that point because she was a little hard on him up to that point, I think. Now, I just that was just kind of a real punch in the gut, I think, a little bit moment there. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, being reminded that, okay, Goose is dead. And up to this point, we didn't really know why there was tension between Rooster and Pete at this point. It wasn't spelled out yet. So you didn't know, okay, is this just straight up, you know, he's mad at Pete because his dad's dead. You know, we didn't know. We didn't get the details yet. So, but no, that was just, that was kind of like a quick little touching moment that I wanted to bring up there. I love hearing Great Balls of Fire again.
Yeah, it's a good callback.
But then, oh no, that's all I'm going to say there. I was going to keep on going like through the movie.
We can totally,
it was like such a good movie.
Just keep
let's
going,
just relive.
I know.
Let's do like a riff track. So no, I'm just kidding.
It'd be worth it for this one. It's so good.
Okay, so I'm done. Unless you guys had something to add to that, we can move on. I think Rima's up next.
Sure. Are we going into other notes or just favorite?
Oh, were you done with your scenes?
I mean, like I said, I could go.
You can talk about whatever you want. If it's not a specific scene, if you want to just mention a note, go for it.
Well, we've already kind of mentioned her, Phoenix. You know, I love that they had a female pilot, you know, in this movie. I think I kind of mentioned it when we talked about Top Gun. You know, I feel like that was, I mean, I get it. Maybe there weren't that many, you know, in the 80s, and you know, the military has not always kind of been known to be friendly towards the females and allowing them to, you know, be in certain positions or roles. And, you know, I don't know if any women were even considered back in the 80s for going to something like Top Gun or whatever, but I was glad to see, you know, inclusiveness of having a female pilot. And she totally held her own, you know, amongst all the men. In fact, she you know, kind of represented for me. I mean, I know Maverick was like their instructor and he became like the leader of the team once they were out on the mission, but she was like a leader within their group. They all kind of, you know, looked to Phoenix.
Gravitated towards her.
As like a leader. So it wasn't like she was just this badass female pilot who had earned this awesome position to be able to go to Top Gun. She was one of the best to be able to go there, but she was also looked as a leader, you know, from the other men and from the other pilots. Like she was seen as, you know, an amazing pilot on the same level as what they were. And so I loved that. I think she was great. And I think she was a great addition to the cast. So I was happy to see that.
Yeah, same here. It showed respect and it showed, yes, we're in a modern age. Women can do these things. And I'm glad they had that respect amongst her peers who were mostly male and showed that she had more cojones than they did. And, you know, which also leads me to one of my, and it'll be my last one. It's the last favorite scene I would put down. Pete taking down all the kids within the skies when they were trying to do dogfighting.
Yes.
For every time every one of them lost it, they had to do push-ups every time they lose. So, yeah, but Rooster and Pete's strategy on dogfighting that time, wow, that just was really great. But she wasn't the first to go. It was other guys. Mm-hmm. She wasn't the first, so she held her own. So I thought that was great. I just loved the scene itself and the pushing of the G's when he was doing all that, especially through that. And the fact that he wouldn't let go. He didn't want to let it go. So he was after Rooster, and it looked like a bunch of birds fighting in the sky with these two jets. It was just wild to see and the expression on the other people's face. But the fact is, every time after one loses, you see the push-up scene.
It was great. Yeah. It was great. Didn't even have to show them losing. You just knew because they were having to do the push-ups.
Yep.
It was so good.
Okay, so I guess we're up to me then. My last, at least, point that I wanted to talk about, or scene rather, is probably what everything built up to, and that was when they actually go and to perform the mission. They have to go and attack the facility, what they've all trained for. I was like nervous and tense. I don't know about you guys, because I up to this point, and they actually kind of, I thought somebody was going to die.
I thought so too.
There was a part of me, I mean, they were really kind of spelling it out like Maverick wasn't coming back.
Oh, yes.
You know, I was like, and then I was
my fear was for Rooster.
Maybe it's yeah, I was like, is Rooster not coming back? Or is it one of these other, I mean, you got to know all the characters. Yeah. So I was like, is one of these other pilots not coming back? Mm-hmm. You know, I was like, oh gosh, somebody's not coming back from this. They've kind of told us this the entire movie, you know, that someone's not coming back from this mission. So, but just the way that they proceeded as they were going in an approach, and then when they launched that, my favorite scene, I guess, in this whole sequence is when they launch those missiles and the rockets like fly over top of the ships, you know, fly over top of the planes, and the pilots are all looking up and they show the rockets flying over the land and everything. I just thought that was incredible.
Yes.
And it makes you really think, like, wow, so that is like how war actually happens, you know, nowadays. And that's actually how those, I think, I don't know if they were Tomahawk missiles or whatever, but that's actually how they go and how they fly and do their everything. And they knock out the base. But no, their training, we got an idea of what this canyon was going to be like. And it was exactly like it was going to be. Actually a little, I thought the snow was a cool effect.
Yeah.
I wasn't really expecting that, but, and then the other point, when they actually like get out, they've already dropped and they've blown up the underground facility. There's a scene where all the four planes, it's just chaos. All the SAMs, what are they? Air missiles? What are they called? They're called SAMs for short, but what does that stand for? Anyway, it doesn't matter. Surface to air missiles. The SAMs are launching and everybody's like, they're doing their countermeasures, launching their flares, and they're all like talking to each other. And it seems like chaos, but everybody knows exactly what they're doing. And there's a point where it pans out and you're seeing like the four planes flying and the flares are going off and the SAMs are exploding. And it's just such a great shot. And it reminded me of back in the original, because I know that I touched upon this when Rima and I were talking. There was a point where Iceman was getting chased by like five or six MiGs. And they did a shot where they took back and it was like the five or six MiGs were all like spinning around. And that it was like, it kind of like mirrored that a little bit. And we said like they did a lot of mirroring in this. So I don't know if it was intentional or I don't know if it was just me looking for too much. But it was just, I saw it. I was like, oh my gosh, this is like total chaos. And like, you just think someone's going to die. Yeah. At this point. And then when Pete took the took the hit for Rooster and then he crashed. I actually thought that was it for him. until we saw him a little later. But it's that was just one of those tense scenes where I'm like, just get out of there. And then when he got hit, I was like, oh shoot, he did die.
Yeah, it was
and that's it for Pete.
Yeah, I felt that scene was like as great as it was, because I like that a lot. And the fact that it felt like that Iron Eagle moment at the very end, the ultimate scene, it's the battle, it's we gotta do this, you know, we have to come in all guns blazing, let's get all the cool action bits in, you know, kind of like Louis Gossett Jr. when he goes down in Iron Eagle, so did Maverick. So I thought that was a pretty good equation, but yeah, I thought it was pretty cool as well.
Yeah, and there was actually another, go backtracking a little bit, when they were flying through the canyon, there was another tie-in or reference, I think, callback to the first one. When Rooster is slowing down, he's not fully engaged. Mm. And I don't know whoever his wingman was. I don't know if it was Payback or whoever it was trying to get him to speed up because they were falling behind time wise. Mm-hmm. And he was yelling at him. And it was like a callback to when Pete wouldn't engage in the first Top Gun.
Yeah, because PTSD.
During that final flight. And he was getting yelled at by, the
Hollywood.
The tall actor. What's that? No. He was getting yelled at by who took over for Goose? Shoot. Can't think of it.
Wolf
anyway,
Man?
Real tall actor. No, he was a tall actor. Oh, I'm kicking myself. Anyway,
it was Tim Robbins, but I can't think of his character.
Tim Robbins.
Thank you.
I can't remember his call sign or his.
Me neither.
But I know it's Tim Robbins.
But anyway, Tim Robbins was. Tim Robbins was yelling at Pete to engage, and whoever was yelling at Rooster to, you know, speed up. And I think that's when we got the talk to me dad.
From Rooster.
Yeah, he did the whole talk to me dad.
It was so good.
And then he finally like engaged. And I think even one of the people back on the ship said,
and what was so cool, you say that when he says, talk to me dad, you know, very much like Maverick would say, talk to me goose. And he says, talk to me dad. And whose voice does he hear come through his earpiece? But Maverick.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It was such a great moment. Like, tears.
Tears. Don't think, just do. Yeah. And then he went ahead and engaged. So that was another tie. Yeah, like, we can go hours and hours on all the tie-ins. Every scene, every moment had some direct tie-in.
I mean, I think a lot of it was intentional. You mentioned earlier, I'm not sure if that was intentional or not, like the dogfight. I think a lot of it was. I mean, you know, mentioning the scenes when Maverick was taking out all of them at the flight school, you know, I think every single one of those like missions and maneuvers they were doing in Maverick is very much all the same ones that they were doing in the 86 movie with Viper and Michael Ironside. I cannot think of his friggin' call sign either, but you know, a lot of those were the like same maneuvers, you know, that they all got taken out on, you know, by their instructors. And especially Viper, because he was like the best of the best, and he always took all of them out. So I feel like a lot of those, when you're seeing that mirroring in this movie, it is intentional, which was great. It was done in a well done way without being like, oh gosh, we're watching like the same movie or something. So that's my guess anyway, and speculation. It's good.
All right. So now is when we can go ahead and just. Any other notes that we might have or any points you wanted to bring up? Reema, I know you said you had lots of stuff.
Oh,
so
gosh.
Do you have anything you want to bring to the table now?
I have so many things. I love the enemy plane's evasive maneuver at the end when Maverick and Rooster, that funky, what was it like, this weird flip of the plane, whatever the hell it was that he did, was just amazing. I mean, I think I was sitting there just as flabbergasted when he did that weird spin move and ended up behind them whenever, you know, they were, you know, so it was so, so good. I mean, it was a great feat of flying. And that, I don't know if it was because I didn't go through and like pick apart and see which. I know that there are a lot of practical effects in here. A lot of what you're seeing are real planes, real pilots, and practical effects. There was some CGI. I'm totally fine with that, but I was really happy that they stuck with practical effects. I don't know if this was a real stunt and move that a practical effect, or if it was a CGI, but I did find a YouTube video of an actual pilot that did this actual move in a plane very similar than in the movie. And it was absolutely amazing to watch. So it actually can be done. It is an actual maneuver. It can be tricky and it can be dangerous. But anyway, just thought that was an amazing scene. Do you want me to go?
Yeah, that was pretty wild.
Should I name all of them?
Well, there was something else that I thought of earlier that I wanted to mention, and it had to do with the callbacks. I liked when right after the scene that I had talked about when Pete left the bar in the beginning when they were singing Great Balls of Fire, and then the very next scene is when they're meeting in the hangar and the guys are getting briefed by what was his name? I think he was Warlock was his call sign. And he's introducing Pete as their instructor. And it's almost word for word when they were introducing Kelly McGillis, and the whole sequence mirrored Kelly McGillis's introduction as the walking up. Of course, they didn't show the heels because that would be a little too weird. If they had Tom Cruise in heels, that'd be weird. It was the exact same feel, you know, like everyone was looking like, oh, that was the guy at the bar last night, because whatever, 35 years ago, it was, oh, that was the girl from the bar last night. So I wanted to mention that because I thought that there were just so many references and callbacks, but that one was like really well done. And it was almost, the script was almost like word for word, the way he was introducing them and the way the scene was set up with the hangar and the guys are sitting there. And it was just really good. I wanted to mention that because it was just really good. I got a chuckle out of it.
Yep. Really well done.
Yep.
Mark, did you have something or should we go back to Rima?
No, go back to Rima. I think she's...
You've used all your notes, you'll just chime in with ours.
I'll just chime in with my agreement and have fun listening to her.
That's good. Go ahead, Rima. What else you got?
Well, I love that at the end, they made Maverick an ace. You know, what's considered a flying ace or a fighter ace pilot, which is a thing. And that's where you're credited with shooting down 5 or more enemy aircraft during aerial combat, and this last mission had put him up to 5, so they, you know, had made him an ace, and I just thought, just perfect, you know, good way to kind of end the movie, kind of winding down, you know, his career. So, you know, they're not real specific if he's retired or anything at the end. It was kind of vague, and I don't think super important, but it was just a nice way, like a nice little, you know, tie off to kind of icing on the cake to his career and all of his achievements, you know, because I don't think they're, you know, especially in because they were kind of talking about how rare it was, like there in the movie in these days where, you know, there aren't actual pilots hardly anymore. It's, you know, drones and, you know, there aren't a lot of the dogfights where there's actually this one-on-one kind of combat like they were experiencing here. So there probably were not a lot of aces left. And so just to see him come out as one was just an absolute like cherry on top for me, for Maverick.
Yeah, that was cool. I did know it was a thing. It was surprising to hear. Yeah, that was pretty good. I wanted to mention about the reference to the Meg Ryan character. She, when Pete's discussing with Penny, you know, why Rooster's actually really upset with him. And we know it's pulled his application from the Naval Academy.
Yeah.
But we find out it's because his mom didn't want him to fly after Goose died.
Yep.
And then we find out, of course, why Meg Ryan isn't in this. Well, her character died at some point, too. But I thought that was it was tastefully done. It didn't give us too much information, any more information than we needed. It was pretty simple, and I thought it was just really touching, and it really showed another side of Pete that we hadn't seen before. And that's when he actually even says, like, I'm trying to be a father for him, you know, the father that he lost. I've been trying to be that, and I don't think I've been good at it, or something like that. I'm paraphrasing. But he's actually, when we find out that she died, he's actually trying to be both parents too for Rooster. So, but I kind of thought when I heard that, I was like, oh man, that's really, he's taking one here. Cause he says, what's the exact line? He's like, he already resents me. There's no point in resenting her too.
Yeah.
And I thought like, wow, that's like, that's so deep.
I know. It's like a whole new Maverick, you know. It's because Maverick is still himself at the core. He's still pissing off admirals. He's still, you know, doing his flybys. He's still breaking the rules, bending the rules. but it's he's a more mature Maverick. He's more of a team player, you know, he yes. cares about people. He, you know, like you said, when you mentioned in the beginning where he's, you know, testing the limits and trying to get up to Mach 10 to save all of these people's jobs, you know, and then how much he cares about those kids, or, well, they're not kids, I guess, but, you know, his pilots, yeah. you know, wanting to, because he's like, we're going to bring them home, right? You know, it's not about just the mission. We want to make sure everyone mm-hmm. comes home, yeah. you know, and then also stressing about, you know, not leaving your wingman, which was a big thing, or abandoning your wingman, like, which is a big point in the first movie. And it's mm-hmm. about, you know, having to kind of take accountability, and also having to explain, you know, if you screw up, or if you have to come home and talk to a family and tell them, you know, hey, they didn't get to come home, and here's why, you know, like Maverick did to Goose's wife when Goose died. You know, he had to do that, mm-hmm. and he didn't want anyone else to have to carry that burden. You know, so it was a different Maverick this time around. He's still the same at his core, you know, still, you know, playful and dangerous, but definitely more mature. And, you know, I liked that they didn't have, you know, like, they could have just easily made Rooster's resentment of Maverick be about Goose dying, like, blaming mm-hmm. him for his death, but it had mm-hmm. nothing to do with that. It was just yeah. all about, like, holding back his career, pulling his application. Mm-hmm. And so I'm glad that it was about that and not about any resentment for him blaming him for his death.
And I like that, too. In a way, I was kind of happy when we found out that's what it was. And I was a little disappointed when they had a confrontation somewhere along the line. And Rooster was like, well, my dad trusted you, or my dad yeah. did this. He made something. I can't remember what he was.
Yeah.
What happened to him?
And I was like, man, I wish he wouldn't have said that. Yeah. Because I thought we were past this. You know, I thought we were past this, Rooster. But, you know, kicking mad
really
while he's
mad.
Down.
Yeah, he was just, I think,
yeah,
really
he was mad. He was mad and upset.
Yeah.
But they made up at the end.
Yeah.
With the big, almost father-son.
Yeah, home. Well, yep. Rooster knew enough how to kick Pete in the balls when he needed it, so.
mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that's for sure. You got another one, Rima?
Let's see. I probably do. Sorry, just going through my notes and what we've already talked about, or what you might have already talked about. You know what? I think that might be it. Just in general, you know, a note about how this, to me, was like such a love letter to the original film, you know, and from Tom, you know, to all of us fans and the fans of the first movie. I mean, I'm sure that we all saw the message before the movie started, right, from Tom.
Yes.
You know, look, you can...
That was a surprise.
It was a
yeah.
surprise, but it was so cool. You know, and look, you can say what you want about Tom Cruise. You know, I won't get into any of that other stuff, but, you know, what I really appreciate about him is the dude does the work, and he understands the assignment. You know, for me, I want... Mm-hmm. When I go to a movie, I want to be entertained. You know, I want to enjoy myself. And that is ultimately professionally what Tom Cruise goes and tries to do, is to make, you know, a top mm-hmm. rate kind of film. He puts everything he's got into his performance. The dude is in, gosh, he's in his freaking 50s and he looks like he's in his 30s. He's in great shape. Mm-hmm. The freaking risks and as stunts that he performs, I mean, he puts everything into it, and you cannot discredit him, you know, yeah. at all, you know, for that. And so for me, it was just an amazing experience, you know, and it was just like a love letter to the original. And I appreciated that. I took that in some moment. So.
Yeah, it was just fantastic. A great tribute to the first. And I'm actually glad because before I was wondering, like, well, why didn't they do a sequel, like, whatever, in the early 90s or something like that right away? You know, why didn't they ride that Top Gun fame back then? And I'm glad
I
they didn't.
This was perfect. Yeah,
it was perfect.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think at this point, none of us were really expecting it when they announced it. And, you know, I've been kind of pissing and moaning for the last 2 or 3 years because, you know, we know the movie's been held back for so long. Right. And I was, you know, kind of ticked about it, thinking, can we just please get this movie? If there's one thing that we need in these last 2 years, for me personally speaking, is some freaking entertainment and something to, you know, get me feeling better about this messed up world that we live in, right? That's what's going to do it for mm-hmm. me, is this movie. And they kept pushing it back and kept pushing it back. And then when I learned that it was actually Tom Cruise that was like, we're not just going to, you know, because all the streaming services were itching to get their hands on this movie and release it for mm-hmm. streaming. And he's like, nope, I make movies for the big screen and we're not releasing it on a streaming service. And I get there's some people might argue there's an arrogance behind that, but he's freaking Tom Cruise. And honestly, I just don't doubt that he it just has that ability, honestly.
Yeah.
So, but it was worth the wait.
It was.
Absolutely worth the wait.
Oh, for sure.
And to let you know, Rima, actually, Tom Cruise will be 60 on July 3rd.
I knew he was right up there. The dude.
Wow.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I knew he was close, too, because I remember for the original, he was like 25, somewhere around there. So I knew he was pushing 60.
Frickin' believable.
Okay, Mark, anything you wanted to add, or are we going to move on to...
I'm good.
Okay.
So we can move probably on... Right. Two interesting facts or unknown facts about the movie, if we want.
Sure, let's do that. This is a little bit that you like to do on your podcast, Adrenaline Cinema. Yeah. So why don't we go ahead?
Start it off.
I will. I'll give Rima a chance to rest her voice because she's just been talking.
Bye.
No, you're awesome. Drink some water or something. Okay. I'll start off here. Point number one, the P-51 seen in the final minutes is Tom Cruise's own plane. In the final minutes of the movie, Maverick and his love interest, Penny, hop into a World War II P-51 Mustang before flying off into the sunset. And according to Forbes, this just happens to be one of Tom Cruise's private planes. The scene where the hero gets to drive or walk away with his love interest at the end of the movie has played out multiple times in Hollywood, but Top Gun Maverick does things differently by putting the lovers on a jet instead. As someone who has a flying license, it's understandable. Cruise definitely couldn't leave the set without hitting the skies too. The rest of the fighter jets were flown by actual Army pilots. Oh, okay, there we go. So I guess someone had mentioned the one scene about Tom flying that one jet.
They had people, I think, in the back with them, so it made it look like they were flying, but it was the other guy, I think.
Gotcha. Okay. Number two, Mark, why don't you go ahead?
Miles Teller chose his own call sign. So the fictional Navy pilots have cool call signs, and according to Miles Teller, he is the only one that got to choose his sign via USA Today. The actor revealed that he chose Rooster because of the bird family linked to Goose, which is his character's father. The fact that Teller picked his sign has to do with the fact that he came up with the most creative suggestion. For example, Glenn Powell's sniper couldn't cut it because that's already an Air Force call sign, such as the writers picked Hangman for him, and Rooster sure is appropriate because it's bird-related and the character in question happens to be a pilot.
Hmm. Why didn't he go with Duck Duck?
Or Howard the Duck.
I thought it was perfect.
I like Rooster. I thought that was perfect. So it's interesting to hear that he came up with
mallard.
That was perfect. Because like a rooster, you know, and because he has that little wildness about him, you know, he's just a little mm-hmm. goofiness, you know, rooster. It fit. It totally fit.
Totally fit.
Point three, Rima, go ahead.
All right. So CGI is actually used minimally. Sorry, words aren't my friend. So some of the rumors spreading about the movie are that no CGI was used. This is true for the most part since Tom Cruise insisted on realistic scenes, but the moments when enemy missiles fire at the fighter jets are all CGI, and this is via Screen Rant. This is because it would have been dangerous to fire real missiles at the planes. That might be one stunt I guess they would not want to do, is just firing real missiles at the planes. So in the modern age, it's impossible to do an action or adventure movie without some form of CGI. And apart from safety issues, weapons such as missiles aren't cheap either. Using real ones would have inflated the budget. Finding a location to fire actual missiles would have been a whole other headache.
Glad they didn't use real missiles.
Yes. No missiles were harmed in the making of this film.
Right. Number four, the beach scene was shot twice. According to Glenn Powell in an interview with Collider, the shirtless beach volleyball montage was shot twice because Tom Cruise didn't like the first shot. Everyone was forced to go back to the gym and work on their bodies before the scene was repeated in a few weeks. Holy cow. And a tale about Navy pilots placing much emphasis on a beach scene might seem odd, but there's a good reason for that. In the first movie, a similar shirtless volleyball game was one of the most discussed moments, hence it made sense for it to be replicated. Luckily, meticulous perfectionism yielded great results. Oh my
gosh. Everybody go cut those carbs and come back in 2 weeks. Yes. And get fit for the scene.
I don't see enough six packs.
Who got a keg?
Can I just wear a shirt, sir? Let me wear a shirt. No t-shirts. No t-shirts. All right. Who we have to mark?
Yeah, next up. Three actors were in contention to be Rooster. Miles Teller, Nicholas Holt, and Glenn Powell were all considered to play Rooster. They were all flown to Tom Cruise's home for chemistry tests, and Teller came out on top. This is via Fox News. But Powell had impressed Cruise and Jerry Bruckheimer, so he was given a different role. While Teller got to the role on merit, he can thank the heavens for having someone who was rooting for him. It helped that director Joe Kaczynski preferred the actor. He had even photoshopped a mustache on him and showed it to Cruise. Kaczynski had Teller had worked together in Only the Brave, where Teller also played a soul-like figure to Josh Brolin's character.
I thought Miles Teller was so great. I'm not familiar with other things that he's been in, but I thought he was great, and I thought the chemistry with him and Tom Cruise was great.
It was spot on.
Yeah. And he looked so much like Anthony Edwards.
Absolutely.
I couldn't imagine.
Especially once they
got
the mustache on him. But yeah, it was so good. I mean, like that scene where he's like, what were you thinking? He's like, you told me not to think. And Maverick's just like looking at him in like stunned silence because he threw his words right back at him. And then Rooster just kind of shrugs at him like, well, you know, what are you going to say? And it was just absolutely perfect. I mean, definitely they did a good job with the chemistry of those two. Okay, so number six, the military was involved. So the Department of Defense Entertainment Media Office provided support for the movie in terms of expertise and military equipment. According to retired Air Force Lieutenant Colonel Glenn Roberts in an interview with the Washington Post, who heads the office, the department has been in existence for over a century and also oversaw the making of the first ever Best Picture Oscar winner, Wings. Renting military equipment is the sweetest part of the deal since the studio would otherwise have to buy them or create them using CGI, options which either feel expensive or simply not satisfactory. Thanks to the Department of Defense Entertainment Media Office, audiences get to see a mammoth naval ship and numerous jets. Yay, thank you.
I've loved aircraft carriers ever since I was a kid.
Heck like, yeah.
You know, I was a G.I. Joe fan.
Oh my gosh, yes. Course.
I didn't own the flag because, you know, only like whatever, the richest kid in the neighborhood had the flag. But I'd love going to toy stores and seeing the box.
Same here.
Way up in the rafters.
Hell
like, oh,
yes.
There it is.
Yep, me too.
How much that is worth but, now. Yeah. Forget it.
Oh, gosh. In the box? Oh, my God.
It's like $5,000. Wow. Ming Chen from Comic Book Men owns one.
Oh, yeah.
Bought it.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
All right. Number seven, Val Kilmer's AI dialogue. Since Val Kilmer can no longer speak, his voice was developed by the AI company Sonantic via Variety. The company used voice snippets from the actor's past movies to come up with the appropriate vowels. The Val Kilmer scene is a groundbreaking one as it opens the door for more movies to use AI to create voices, especially for dead actors or those with health complications. Whether or not that becomes a trend remains to be seen. For now, fans can be glad that they at least got to see the return of one of the most likable Top Gun characters, thanks to technology. So he didn't actually, those few words he spoke, he wasn't actually speaking them.
He was probably mouthing them.
He was mouthing it and they had, right. I didn't know his condition was that severe.
Yeah.
There was rumors and talks. A lot of people were telling me that his son did his voice, which would make sense.
Oh, okay.
Because they do sound alike. If you watch the actual documentary, Val, because his son is moderating.
Yeah, I'll have to watch that. Yeah. Jeez. But, yeah. Yeah, who knows where they'll go with it, where they're going to go with it. Yeah, because we know Star Wars does a lot of, has done a lot with doing the CGI of past characters.
Yeah, like Grand Moff Tarkin.
Yeah, and Carrie Fisher. All right, number eight.
Number eight. It had five different release dates. Of course it did. Top Gun Maverick was originally meant to be released on July 12, 2019, but a month after filming, the date was pushed on to June 26, 2020. Due to the COVID-19 pandemic, the movie was pushed again to December 23rd, 2020, then to July 2nd, 2021, then to November 19th, 2021, before final date of May 27, 2022 was agreed upon. The military movie now counts among the Hollywood movies that were delayed multiple times and given the box office figures. That was a good thing. Now, also feels like the perfect time for the movie to come out, as Tom Cruise has been making headlines ever since he was rumored to play a variant of Iron Man a few months ago. Which, yeah, it was a whole big, huge rumor. I thought it would happen, but it didn't.
And with every date change, that was followed by Rima going, shit.
That's true.
That is accurate. I just thought we're just never going to get it. It's just never going to happen. Yep. That is the truth. Number nine, it had been in development hell. So Tom Cruise first hinted at a sequel during an interview back in 2000 on the Australian morning show Sunrise. However, production would only begin in 2010. Unfortunately, everything was put on hold after Tony Scott's death in 2012 via Showbiz Cheat Sheet. It would take another 5 years for production to start again. For now, fans can only imagine what the movie would have looked like if it had come out earlier. The major probability is that Val Kilmer would have had a bigger role, something which might have changed the dynamic involving the younger actors. But given the success of the current installment, it's unlikely that the next one will take too long to be made. Wait a minute, there's another one?
There's rumors about it. There's talks. Okay. But don't believe everything you hear.
I've heard of any type of rumor, but I think it's fine. Just let's leave it.
Yeah, wrapped up nice with a nice little bow on it.
The fact that they can make a sequel flying off like this sunset. Amazing, you know, that I think probably tops the first one a little bit for me. Let's leave it alone. So
Okay, point number 10 here. Lewis Pullman's father also flew a jet in another movie. Lewis Pullman, who plays Bob, is the son of Bill Pullman, who flew an older version of the FA-18 Hornet on Independence Day, or in Independence Day. And while Lewis flew the Hornet, his father needed a stunt double. As one of the actors with famous parents, Lewis can one day hope to be as prolific as his father, and he appears on track to do that given the number of projects he's lined up. One of the reasons he looks very comfortable in the role is that he recently played another military man in Catch 22. I didn't know going into it who he was, but he looked so darn familiar to me. And then when I was watching the credits at the end and his last name was Pullman. I'm like, it's Bill Pullman's son.
Hey, Bob was an MVP during this movie. He was so great.
Bob was great. Oh, love Bob. Bob was awesome.
Yep. What's your call sign?
Bob. Okay. All right, so now we're going to go to the box office. We do have some information here for Top Gun Maverick, courtesy of boxofficemojo.com. Top Gun Maverick was released on May 27th domestically, and to date has grossed over $608 million worldwide, with about $343 million of that coming from here in the U.S. Wow. Since its release, it's been the number one grossing movie daily, overtaking Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness. But I have a feeling its run's going to come to an end, because as we speak, Jurassic World Dominion is out in the theaters, and I'm pretty sure that's going to kick some major butt.
Maybe.
I got to tell you, this is the summer of blockbusters. I don't know if it's just because we're coming off COVID and not going to movies.
I mean,
I don't remember so many movies I want to go see, and maybe it's just because they're the perfect for like my family, you know, because we got the Marvel stuff, we got the Jurassic stuff, but we got the Top Gun reboot. Gosh, there's so many. What did we go see a couple weeks ago? Oh, the Secrets of Dumbledore movie. Mm-hmm. I took my one son to see that. Gosh, we got Thor coming out.
Looking forward to that too.
It's like
It's just been a little slow the last couple of years. And there's been movies, but nothing has felt like a true blockbuster movie, like the good old-fashioned summer blockbuster.
Yeah, last one that we got was Avengers Endgame, if you think about it, back in...
It's been a while.
2018? Was it 2018, or was it the end of or beginning of 2019? I forget. But... Yeah, that was the biggest one that made a lot of money that everybody was, like, rushing to the theaters to go see. Now it's coming back slowly.
Yeah, I think currently, I think Doctor Strange worldwide had grossed, like, over $900 million. It was, like, $909 million, which is insane. Yeah. So that might hit a billion here in the next couple weeks. Yeah. So, yep, that's what's going on with the box office. Hey, we got a quote section, too. Oh, my gosh. It doesn't end, Peter. Yeah, well, we're going to be here. We're going to be here. Top Gun 3 comes out soon. Okay. all right. Who wants to go? I have three, so I don't know. Rima, why don't you go ahead?
Well.
Do you have any?
Oh, of course.
Okay.
My first one. Do some of that pilot shit, Mav, during the dogfight. Goose said the same line in Top Gun. Mm-hmm. So, just perfect.
I think they pulled the original script and probably just highlighted. Okay, we want to say that.
We got to hit
They don't say Need for Speed, though. They don't say Need for Speed. They leave that alone, which is good, I think.
Just leave it.
They heard Rima on the last episode of Watched It in the 80s.
Exactly.
And what you said about it. If I say this out in public and they don't fill it in, I don't.
It's disappointing. It's disappointing. It hurts my feelings.
Mark, you got it?
Oh, yeah. This is an interesting little scene that they have a conversation in Rooster and Maverick. It's when they're at odds. Maverick screams at him, "It's the team, Rooster. It's about the team." And Rooster just goes, "It's about the pilot," or "It's the pilot." And Maverick goes, "Exactly." And then Pete takes a second and realizes what he stated to Goose's son, because it's literally what he would do. He's a bit of Goose and himself all in one in Rooster. So that was a giving scene about where this movie was going. It's about family, loving those and missing those, plus growing up, which Pete had to do as well, about growing up.
My first one that I have, actually was said two times. I think Hondo was his name. I know he was at the test. He was at the test site in the beginning of the movie. And then he came along with Maverick to help him train the pilots. And then he was also on the aircraft carrier at the end. But he's like, and a couple times he goes to Maverick, like, "Maverick, I don't like that look." And Maverick's just like, "It's the only one I've got," which is very similar to some things that Penny, Penny says, "Don't give him that look." And he's just like, "What look?" So I thought every time he was going to say, "It's the only one I've got," like it's his new tagline. At least they switched it up. Okay. Rima?
Well, I actually already said one of my others that I love so much, when that was the, "What were you thinking?" He's like, "You told me not to think." I love that moment, you know, between them, because we get that from the original, you know, when Maverick's like, you know, you don't have time to think. And he kind of tells Rooster that, you know, a couple times, trying to coach him, and because he's being so conservative and not wanting to take that risk. And that was just great to have that, like, thrown back at him. So that was one of mine I already said earlier. That was perfect.
Okay. Mark?
Next one for me would be from Rear Admiral, played by Ed Harris, saying, "The end is inevitable, Maverick. Your kind is headed for extinction." And Pete just retorts, "Maybe so, sir, but not today."
That was so good. That little bit of Maverick cockiness. Yep. But he's right. Not today. Maybe out of a job someday, but not today. This one I got, it was kind of a cute scene after, again, we thought, I thought maybe Maverick was dead. When the test plane, the Dark Star, blew up. And I think the screen went black, and then we saw him walking into that town, and he goes in the diner and doesn't say anything, and everyone's staring at him. He drinks the water, and then he goes to the waitress, "Where am I?" And the little boy eating his Fruit Loops beside him goes, "Earth," because he's in his astronaut's outfit.
I love that
was so cute. Yeah, that was so cute when he said that, because it was like this town. I don't even know where he was, but this town was like, I don't know. It was looking like the 90s, wherever it is.
Middle of nowhere.
Yeah, like middle of nowhere, desert somewhere. Yeah. So funny.
That was a good one, though. Yeah, I like that. All right, next.
That's it for me. That's all I had.
Okay. Got another one, Rima, or are you done too?
One more between Cyclone and Maverick when Cyclone says, your reputation precedes you, Captain. Maverick says, thank you, sir. That wasn't a compliment. Love that.
All right. My last one is, and it's similar to what Mark had said when Maverick is talking to his students, and he says, it's not the plane, it's the pilot. Which is then also repeated to him. That's what Rooster tells him when at the end, when they're in that even older plane, the F-14, I guess. I think. I don't know. It's older than the one they were in. It was what Pete flew back in 86 in the first Top Gun. So
Yeah.
And he was like, oh, we're going against fifth gen fighters. And he's like, oh, it's not the plane, it's the pilot. So I thought that was good. And that was just the theme of the whole movie, that it was really about the person.
Absolutely.
The person who's in there, who's going out on the mission. You know, of course, Pete was looking out for Rooster, but he was looking out for everybody. So he wanted everyone to come home. All right. I think we may be done discussing it. So now we're going to move on here to where the listeners can hear everybody. Mark. Where can I know your listeners that are listening now know where to hear you, but anybody else who isn't used to hearing Mark, where can they hear
obviously
you?
Obviously, you could hear me on Adrenaline Cinema Podcast. Obviously, you Adrenalites know where I am at. All you have to do is search Adrenaline Cinema Podcast on the Pirate Core Entertainment Network. All you have to go to piratecoreentertainment.com, and obviously, you'll see links for Watch It in the 80s, Adrenaline Cinema Podcast, Run for Your Lives, as well as Fantasy Picks Movie Edition, where Rob and his friends are new to the Pirate Core Entertainment Network. So check those out. You can check Adrenaline Cinema. You'll know to go to Facebook.com and all that good stuff. You could also hear me on Panels to Pixels Podcast on the Next Level Online Radio Podcast Network. There we're covering right now The Boys as well as Miss Marvel. So check those out when they drop. And look out for episode 200, where I interview the one and only, the man himself, Kevin Smith.
That's so awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. I can't believe you were able to pull that together. Great. That's awesome, bro. So happy for you when you said you were
doing that. Yeah, it was fun. And you guys get to hear it and see it, I would say, in another two episodes.
Awesome.
Great. Looking forward to it. How about you, Rima?
Well, you can find my podcast, Strange Indeed, on the Podcastica Network, along with all the other great podcasts. And you can find all of them at podcastica.com. And all of our links to social media are there. All of our podcast episodes are there, along with all the other great podcasts. A lot of great content, something for everyone.
Awesome.
Yep. And Watched It in the 80s podcast. You can visit Watched It in the 80s podcast.com for full episode lists. Also, Facebook and Instagram at Watched It in the 80s podcast. You can visit that as well. And if you want to submit feedback to any of our podcasts for any of our episodes, you can do that a couple ways. I mentioned social media, Facebook and Instagram at Watched It in the 80s podcast. I put out teaser posts for my episodes. Also Twitter at WIIT80S podcast. I had to think about that. And, also, you can also send an email, too. I'm a big fan of getting audio feedback. That doesn't happen often, but you can send me an audio file or just a good old-fashioned written email to watchitinthe80spodcast@gmail.com. All right, Mark, how can they get in touch with you?
As always, you listeners know, all you have to do is go to facebook.com/adrenalinecinemapodcast. Just follow, look at the picture of what we're covering. You know, just comment below the picture. And then we'll talk about it when we're on the podcast. We'll mention your name, give your feedback. You could also just email us regularly with a regular texted email and just type out your thoughts. You could send that to adrenalinecinemapodcast@gmail.com. Or if you feel that you want to be verbal and you want to hear your voice on the podcast and we'll actually play and listen to it and talk about it, all you have to do is record yourself and attach it as an attachment or leave it as an attachment on the email and we'll play it. That's about it.
All right. How about you, Rima?
Well, I love all of our listener feedback. So we're covering Stranger Things right now. So we'd love to hear everyone's thoughts on the new season. You can leave us feedback at Twitter at StrangeTcast. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/StrangerTcast. You can email us at strangerthingscastpod@gmail.com, where I love emails, but I also am like you, Damien. I love a good voice message. If you record yourself on your phone and email us your voice message, I love getting to hear from our listeners as well. And then you can find the links to all of those social media links for us at strangeindeed@podcastica.com.
Awesome.
All right. And we'll include all the links to this episode when I put it out in the show notes. Yep. And I'm sure Mark's going to do something similar. So, okay. That being said, I think we're coming to a close here. So, guys, hey, I want to thank you so much for coming together and doing this. You know, Rima, we did Top Gun just last week or 2 weeks ago, actually, but last episode. And thank you for, you know, agreeing to come here with me and Mark and do this. Mark, thank you for, you know, I know you wanted to do this with Rima a long time ago, so thank you for at the last minute, including me.
It was a group effort, come on.
It was a group effort, so this was a lot of fun. I love the movie, but I also loved talking about it here with you guys. It was a lot of fun.
Me too. Thank you so much for having me, guys. This was a blast. It was a great movie to chat about, so thank you for including me. I'm so grateful.
Welcome.
All right. Well, that being said, that's it for Watch It in the 80s podcast / Adrenaline Cinema podcast. that's it. Thank you very much for listening. I'm Damien.
I'm Mark.
And I'm Raina.
And remember, you watched it in the 80s and you can watch it now.